Thursday, September 19th, was my fourth early morning in a row. Mr. Pear came in at about 8:15 to give me a shampoo and set, but conscience won over vanity, and I said, just make it a comb out, and I'll spend this time talking to Lyndon. The last 2 days, I feel I have hardly seen him. My mind and efforts have been on my own affairs. We talked about how I would join him for the weekend, flying down to Texas late Friday afternoon, and with the Boyds and the Mahons, that delighted me. I am so pleased. For some time now, maybe 2 weeks, he has been swimming every morning. Dear little Marie has been going with him faithfully, and I think she adopted that hairdo, partly just so she could swim with him. I make it only once or twice a week. I worked at the desk with Ashton, clearing up a good deal of the backlog that accumulates when I do not touch it for 2 days. Then, on my way to New York, stopped in the Rose Garden for pictures with Nancy Gates Hayes and her husband Bill, and Jeff and Chip and Cindy and Kathy. It has been a real pleasure having them here. And there was that one nice night when very late, about 10 or 10:30, Nancy and Bill had dinner with us, and the four children came in after a movie and were introduced, and Lyndon heaped them with presents to take home. Nothing gives him more pleasure. The garden is tired and bedraggled. Still a few pink and red geraniums. The Nicotiniana in full lavender bloom. But the fountain down in the south lawn is glorious. Better this summer than I've ever seen it. With the pink geraniums and the white petunias. I caught the 11 o'clock shuttle and was in the Pierre at 12:30, lunched with Rita Woolman, and talked about a possible costume for the inaugural of January 69. We thought of beige and brown with a rich brown fur. Bess, that organized, forethoughted person, is planning for my future and says that Rita Woolman is someone who might be helpful in organizing my shopping on future trips to New York. And indeed, I will be coming back to New York. I am spoiled. I hope once or twice a year I shall treat myself to some of the same. Though it will indeed not be the same without Bess and a lovely apartment and all that goes with being First Lady. Not in 5 years have I become accustomed to that phrase. After lunch, I fitted the bright pink dress for Miss Trez and Marquise. Then, at 2:30, saw Molly Parnes, who invited me to be her house guest when I would come to New York after January. A little past 3, we left the Pierre by car, and to travel across the country in a car has come to be a very special treat for me. For a long, long way, it was just the drab fringes of the city. And then, quite suddenly, we turned off onto a narrow, winding road that was preciously rural. The branches of the trees almost met over the road. There were a few discreet, tastefully marked entrances to what I expect were elegant homes, but the intent of the people who lived here to get away from city living was very evident. A little before 5, we drove up at Cragwood in Far Hills, and there was Jane standing at the front door to meet me. And from then on, the day was sheer delight. We went out on a terrace that opened on the garden. The grounds drifted down to a swimming pool and then a sheer cliff, it appeared to be, and a deep valley, and on the other side, misty hills rising. Everything forest covered, occasionally a roof rising among the trees. There were Jane and Bess and I and her sister, Barry Briand, her secretary, and the curator. I have learned a few things about the very rich in my 5 years here. One is that on a state of this kind, there's very likely to be a security man. There was here. But this is a more unusual part of a household, a curator. It fits with Jane's marvelously organized and very diversified life. Family drifted in and out, a couple of the children. Charles arrived, so much thinner. That was one of the happy things about this trip, to see how much he'd lost and to know it might add years to his life. We had delicious paper-thin sandwiches and tea in eggshell-thin cups. And then we went on a tour of the house, an exquisite colorful medley of treasures from all periods, all cultures. But the room dominated for me by an enormous bouquet that must have been about 8 dozen carnations. Pinks, reds, oranges, corals, an explosion of color, everything except white. And one of the most fascinating things was a very small, delicate, intricately detailed portrait of Charles' 90-year-old mother. We walked through the living room and the dining room, the library, all the exquisite bedrooms, everyone very different. And there in Charles' room was an enchanting, dreamy portrait, also by Aaron Schickler, of Jane in bed in a filmy bed jacket. But do not be deceived, I am sure she was working like a beaver. And then we descended the path that led to the swimming pool, with its lovely backdrop of misty valley and hills beyond. And there was a delightful, very informal sort of family living room, open for summer, a huge fireplace for winter, stone beams, dramatic contemporary paintings, a bar, an office and living quarters for the curator. I'm sure it must be a haven for the children, and this is a house full of children, as is evident at every turn. And down below, the most surprising thing, vaults for their paintings, with, I am sure, the humidity just right, and the security also, and stacks that I would like to copy, slots into which the paintings are pushed, and the curator pulled out great names. French Impressionist, early American Western that was either a Remington or a Russell, contemporary, and here I learned that when Jane closes a house for several months, many of the treasures are stored away, the paintings, other valuable things, and that happens in a house in Florida, and in this house, the organization, the burden, seems enormous to me. My admiration for her industry grows the more I know her. Tyler joined us here. I'm so glad that he and Bess are sharing this trip with me. Bess shares so much that it's just work. We returned to the terrace and had a cocktail. Ambassador Byrod, who had brought the nay winds of Burma to see us, and his wife came in, and Jane and Charles' daughter Annette and Sam Reed, her husband, and another daughter Susan, and Charles Baskerville, the portrait painter. And then I went upstairs to my elegant yellow bedroom that looks out on the heavenly view and found all my clothes unpacked. I put on my white Molly Parnas with the long sleeves. Jane's hairdresser gave me an exquisite updo. And I went downstairs for a dinner party. It was a jewel among evenings. The things that I shall remember most, besides Charles's wonderful loss of weight, are the air of family that pervaded the evening. There was Charles's 90-year-old mother in a wheelchair, exquisitely dressed, wearing a necklace of real diamonds almost to her waist, and having as much fun as any guest present. Two daughters, Susan and Annette, with her husband, and a table full of their younger friends, Jane's sister, Mrs. Rupert Gerard, and her husband, and of course her sister Barry, and another thing, the unbelievably beautiful flowers. There were 4 tables, and guests received cards directing them to the geranium table, the violet table, the anemone table, whose centerpiece was a great splash of pinks and reds that looked like all the crown jewels of all the Rogers, and the rose table, exquisite and delicate pinks. This was where Charles and I sat. On the other side was Mr. Forbes of the Business Magazine, and there were some old friends, the Doug Dillons, who miraculously never look a day older, and Governor Richard Hughes and Betty, who is a transformed woman, having lost her 80 or 90 pounds. But I felt sad about the governor, who simply did not look well, quiet, less full of the juices of life than I have known him. And Mrs. Bob Minor, who was indeed very full of the juices of life. And there was a name out of the past, Mrs. Sumner Wells, who has paralleled so many of my years in Washington, but whom I could not somehow engage in any conversation, and remained handsome and remote. It was absolutely delicious dinner, exquisitely served, and I relished every moment of it, like a visitor to another planet. But the sweetest event of all was at the end of the dinner when Jane read a telegram from my husband, a sort of love letter, which of course thanked the host for being so nice to me. And then there were toasts. Charles with strong, good words for Lyndon, how I thank him. And I returned one, unsure but determined, And then we went back into the beautiful living room for coffee and liqueurs, and I found myself sitting first with one group and then with another. I liked so much better being a guest than a hostess. There was one outstanding lady, Mrs. Hammond Fenwick, who would make a good subject for our book. A genteel steamroller who is engaged in every good activity in the community, and extending indeed to Washington. One didn't need to be told that she had been for Adlai Stevenson. We found many things in common. Conservation, her interest in Lyndon's education bills. But most of all, I liked to see her operate for some of the gentlemen who were very much opposed to everything she was saying. It was a most skillful duel. He was one of the eternally hopeful about the nature of man liberals, and I would like to know her better. Other guests were neighbors, several of whom had particular interest in conservation, I found. There were about 34 of us in all. And after a while, a small group of musicians in the corner began to lure us into one end of the room for dancing. There were some excellent dancers, and I soon began to imagine that I was too. It was a carefree, thoroughly delightful time, and it was not until I had seen several of the guests take their departure that I made a movement to go upstairs. Then others left, but Jane gathered us up, Tyler Abels, Charles, one or two more, and we sat down in the library and had a nightcap, and the quiet end of evening talk that is often the best of a party. This one spiced with some quite unusual things for me to hear. That is, about their security people and the problems they deal with, and several attempts to enter a robbery or for worse, this house. In one of them, Jane had been present. I thought of the brick house and all the years of my childhood. And there never was a key to any door. And if someone entered in the middle of the night, I could usually tell after a while who it was. If about 10 minutes later there was a loud snoring, I knew it was Uncle Walter. And if there immediately began the plaintive wail of the Victrola, I knew it was my brother Tommy coming home from a date. And if the figure entered, reciting all the names of the Confederate generals and the battles they engaged in as he mounted the stairs and plunked to a room, I knew it was old Good Coleman, whose mind had been deranged by a childhood illness, but who was still a gentleman and welcome in our home. And I thought of all the years at 30th Place when we had never locked a door either, but ran helter-skelter looking for the key when Congress ended and it was time to rent the house, and the renter naturally wanted a key turned over to him. The whole day has been a page out of another book, enormously enjoyed by me, and I am grateful.